Well, good evening and welcome to the second presentation in this, our 15th season of talks on Kentucky Live, Southern Culture at its Best, sponsored by the Friends of WKU Libraries. My name is Brian Coots, and as head of the Department of Library Public Services at WKU, I coordinate this series with help from our webmaster taking pictures back there, Haiwan Wan, and our instruction coordinator at the back, Brian Carson. Dustin Johnson designed our posters, and our technical specialist tonight is Shadden Melke. Tonight's speaker is a native of Bloomington, Indiana, and while growing up, he lived for 5 years in Ibadan, Nigeria. From his boyhood home in Nigeria, down the Amazon to Red Square, Tiananmen Square, and beyond, he's become a world traveler, visiting 30 countries on 5 continents. He attended Indiana University, where he majored in French, and then switched gears to become a freelance cartoonist for 9 years before joining the Lexington Herald Leader in 1984. A year later, he was a Population Institute Global Award winner in 1985. He received the Robert Kennedy Journalism Award in 1999 and the 2000 Pulitzer Prize for Editorial Cartooning, and has been a finalist 3 other times, in 1989, 1998, and 2011. 2 of his cartoon collections have been published as Just Don't Inhale in 1996 and Thinking Inside the Box in 2000. He joined the USA Today as a contributing cartoonist in 2002, and since then his cartoons have been syndicated in print and online and appeared in the New York Times, Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, USA Today, and Newsweek. He's a past president of the Association of American Editorial Cartoonists and has given U.S. State Department workshops in Cameroon and Bulgaria. In Kentucky, his biting cartoons have drawn the wrath of everyone from Governor Bevin to Coach Calipari. A board member of the Cartoonist Rights Network International, he contributes cartoons to Cartooning for Peace website, and on occasion he even does stand-up comedy, finding humor in messages left on his voicemail. We don't need you here in Kentucky causing problems for innocent children. Please welcome Joel Peck.
Thank you, Ryan. I wish I had that. I've got one of my young cartoonist buddies took like 30 of these like furious, livid voice messages and put them to music. It's really clever, but we had a little technical problem with my substandard jump drive, which I'm blaming on our cheap Herald Leader media. That's why they give them away for free, I guess. I won't ever make that mistake again. Anyway, I'm sorry I can't play them for you, although they may violate the Barnes & Noble speech guides. I didn't ask Brian about any language guides for tonight's presentation, so I'll just assume English is okay. I did a stand-up thing once where they only gave us 4 minutes, and right before I went up, this is like some like amateur night, which it's the stupidest hobby ever, right? I mean, I don't get enough negative reaction from the political cartoons. I need it immediately. You suck! So right before I went up, the guy says, okay, now keep it clean. No F word, no C word. I'm like, okay, F word, I know what that is, but C word, I mean, C-word is a word, right? Avast, ahoy, C-word. You know, I thought the C-word was cancer. You know, nobody ever says it out loud, cancer. So it annoyed me so much that the next time I wrote my whole 4-minute thing using only words that started with F and C. What, I'm not allowed to say fundamentalist Christian? Cat food? Food fight, fight club, club foot, foot cream corn, cornflakes, cat fans, first class cabin filling, fat cat, corn fed, cat fans cheering Coach Cal's championship fantasies. forlorn Clinton County Coalfield children flunking chemistry, contemplating cockfighting careers. Finally fucked Catholic father figures fondling cherubic choir boys. Couples finding chemistry, comfortable couch, canoodling, champagne, candlelight, conceivably classic film channel, Frank Capra, Carol Channing, clock climbing Charlie Chaplin, chocolate, caviar, Copperfield, careful fella, friends first, cute, curvaceous, flirtatious, carbon footprint flaunting French chicks cruising California, Florida, and Colorado freeways in fast cars, clad in cleavage-clinging cotton chemises, carrying fake Fendi full of credit cards, that kind of stuff. I don't know. When somebody tells me I can't do something, that makes me want to do it. That's all I'm going to say. I think that's kind of instinctive. The other cartoonist in the crowd here, Jennifer's nodding. Oh, yeah. Don't tell me I can't do something. So political cartooning is a great American art form and one that is almost dead, actually. There are only 23 of us, I think, still working at newspapers. And young people essentially have no idea what it is. There are exactly zero political cartoon books in this bookstore. 30 years ago, there would have been 50 of them, but they don't carry them anymore. So thanks for that, Barnes & Noble. What do I care? It's not like I'm a stockholder or anything. I'm not coming back. I'm glad you finally got to me. 15 years you've had this thing? Once you get Cliffy from Cheers, I guess it's scrape the bottom of the barrel, right? You got, all right, pet, what the hell? Wow. So anyway, all we do is read the news and watch the news and listen to the news. Every possible news medium that there is, I spend all day, every day, absorbed in it. And it's not good, in case you didn't know. My favorite news source right now is the BBC because I feel like those cute accents kind of take the edge off the horror. You know, 48 women and children thrown into the sea off the coast of Somalia, their tiny bodies washing up on shore. Oh my God, that's so cute, bodies. Shore. It's kind of sexy, when you put it that way. BBC. I guess a lot of people now think because of the Trump presidency, the cartoonists have, as they keep saying to us, a field day, which, you know, it's really not worth it. You know, it's not that hard a job to begin with. It doesn't have to be made this easy. I mean, I'm sorry if, by the way, I get paid to express my opinion. So if you disagree with my opinion, that's fine. That does not make us enemies. You know, I don't hate you for thinking differently than me. It's fine. It just means we'd be more interesting dinner companions because, frankly, I get sick of people who think the same way I do. So if I say something you don't like, just blame Brian Coots. I'll give you his cell phone number here. So I read the news all day long. You know, I don't know about Trump. The wall, he wants to build a wall across the whole southern border of the U.S. You know, walls are really expensive. You know what's cheap? Ladders. There's a whole infomercial channel. I'm telling you, a ladder is like $58. It's in Spanish. Los Ladres. Seems like a bad idea. It didn't even work, right? And then, like, days of yore. Yes?
Planes do fly
over walls. Or into them. Thank you for that. Now I've lost my place. I'm going to start over. You know, in days of yore, once they had the wall built, like, the king looked at it and he's like, well, shit, that isn't going to work. We're going to need a moat. You know who's got a moat? Europe. 300-mile-wide Mediterranean moat. That's not keeping anybody out. They still got the tiny bodies washing up on shore. So hot. Those accents. What else Trump wants? You know, I don't know. I mean, keeping out people from other countries, not really that American. I have a solution to the immigration issue. I think people don't really want to leave their loved ones to come here to roof our houses in August and, you know, rake our lawns and stuff. They're just desperate. They just want their share of the stuff. And we have way too much of it, right? We've got these 4,000 square foot suburban homes with 2,000 square foot attics and 2,000 square foot basements and 3-car garages. And they're all full of stuff. We're parking our cars on the street because all that unused exercise equipment is cramming up the garage, right? That's not even all of it. And then we store all this other stuff out by the interstate in the little store it place, right? We'll come back and get it later. Nobody comes back and gets it later. They pay for a while, and they don't pay, and somebody sells it, and that's it. So I say you should open the borders and let anybody come here from anywhere and just empty out all those storage spaces and take all that stuff and go home. The way I look at it, it's their stuff. They made it. We're not even using it. I don't know. I didn't say it was a good idea. I just said it was an idea. I have a lot of ideas. You know, people criticize the press. Oh, you just, you don't like America. Why don't you leave? What's your answer? I have answers. They're just, none of them are any good. My answer to the drug problem is to turn every street-level drug dealer into a Mary Kay consultant. It's true, they have the exact same skill set. One of my older sisters was a Mary Kay consultant. She'd get a new shipment of stuff in from out of town. She'd go down in her basement, spread it out on her coffee table, call up her friends. They'd come over, she's like, try this, it's good stuff. They'd all try it, she'd go, you know, you should go sell that to your friends, I'll front it to you. They'd all go sell it to their friends, and a few months later, everybody's driving a big pink Cadillac. You know, I think it could work. It's an idea. I didn't say it was a good idea. What else is Trump doing? He's been dumping on John McCain again. You know, the guy spent 5 years in a cage and he has terminal cancer. Come on. I mean, pick on somebody. I would say your own size, but that would limit it. Every time I start feeling sorry for McCain, though, I remember that it was him who brought us Sarah Palin. You know, who once famously said, referred to Africa as a country. You know, you'd think she might have heard of Egypt. You know, Algeria or Tunisia or Morocco or Chad or Niger or Mauritania or Ethiopia or Eritrea or Somalia or Nigeria or Liberia or Cote d'Ivoire, Sierra Leone or Togo or Dahomey or South Africa or Rwanda or Lesotho or Angola or Madagascar. That at least rhymes with NASCAR. I'm glad she's gone. I've thought about her though. You know, when I was a few weeks ago when that thing happened in Charlottesville, you know, they bring on all these psychiatrists and experts to try to figure out what's wrong with these young men who are joining these white supremacist groups and shooting people and stuff. And the shrinks always say, well, nobody accepts them. They're just looking for acceptance. It's like the same reason people join gangs. It's the same reason people join Al-Qaeda, basically. You know, they just want to be in something where they'll be allowed in. It's a very low bar, right? I heard one of them say on TV, you know, some of them do it to get girlfriends. I thought I'd tried everything. Apparently, nobody will sleep with these boys. Imagine that. I started thinking, well, somebody should. That would keep them from shooting stuff. But who? I first thought that it should be some new branch of the service. Where you just sign up, you know, to, like, I'm going to screw a skinhead. You know, for God and country. But it's so creepy and misogynistic and, you know, sort of reeks of the sex trade. I mean, so nobody would do that. Plus, nobody would actually sign up for it. There's a little practical problem there. So then I thought, well, maybe what about those Russian girls that they're always kidnapping into porn slavery, you know? It'd be better to just have like one episode with a skinhead and then you get your green card and you're in, right? But that's pretty creepy too. So I discounted that. And then I thought, well, what about Kellyanne Conway and Sarah Palin and Ann Coulter and what's that White House spokesperson's name now?
Sarah.
Oh, that dreadful. Yeah, they should have to do it. It's just an idea, sorry. You know, the Al-Qaeda, I always thought that, I mean, these are 15-year-old boys, right? Seems like you could buy them off with like a mini bike and a cell phone that gets pornography, you know? I mean, that would have to be better than a life in the desert, you know, training to shoot, blow somebody up and then yourself at the same time, you know? I don't know, it seems possible. You know they're crazy, right? They're a little crazy. That whole 72 virgins, what's 72, par? You know, 72 virgins in the afterlife, you go blow yourself up, you're gonna, you, anybody here ever had sex with a virgin? Doesn't exactly make you want to call out next, you know. Maybe 72, 35-year-old divorcees. You might strap on some kind of explosive vest for that and go wading into the marketplace.
If you kill yourself, though, you're not, they say you won't go to heaven.
Oh, you don't get the virgins if you kill yourself? I thought that's how you got them.
Suicide. Well, I mean, no. I guess that's what they believe.
We have to kill them to get it?
Someone does. They can't kill themselves.
You can't kill themselves? I've got that all wrong. I wasn't a religion major. You know, I'm sorry. Well, that's good to know. How do you know so much about Al-Qaeda? Kind of dark-haired, looks slightly ethnic. Where are you from?
My family's from Syria.
From Syria? Uh-huh. Well, when President Trump said no more to the Syrian refugees, our dumb-shit governor jumped immediately on that bandwagon and said, oh yeah, I agree with that. And I was so angry at him. The only thing I like about Matt Bevin is that he has three or four adopted kids from the Horn of Africa. You know, the rest of him I just, like, can't bear. But, I mean, you know, you gotta hand it to somebody, you know. I don't have any kids. I would never do it. I wouldn't adopt any, you know. I hate kids, actually. Not really. They're okay in really, really small doses. And I thought, well, golly, if anybody could understand, you know, the need to take in more refugees, it'd be somebody who has, you know, taken in kids from another country. So I drew this cartoon of him. He was hiding under his desk, and there were pictures on his desk of all his little African-American kids. And he was hiding under his desk, and an aide was looking under at him going, Governor, it's okay. Those aren't terrorists. Those are your own kids. And he wasn't even governor yet. He'd been elected but hadn't taken office. And he went really crazy, and he called a press conference, and he called me and the Herald Leader racist. And he still does it. He still refers to us as the racist Herald Leader. We have a black Republican publisher and a black African-American editorial page editor. And me, who identifies as African-American because of my growing up in Nigeria. And he still calls us the racist Herald Leader. I'll see if I can find the thing in a little while. So anyway, I got distracted, so... I'm going to just talk loud because I can't draw and I can't hold the marker. Like one phallic thing at a time in my hand is my limit.
There's some right here, Joel.
No, I got it. I don't need your self-painted markers. I got a little Sharpie king size. They were out of the Magnum, which is my preferred.
Political
cartoons are not really meant to be funny. You know, they're meant to be provocative. And in the process of basically our whole idea is to have one idea every day, or to seize on one idea, which is, this is a cartoon for idea, which is the light bulb. One thing I really like about cartoons is like the graphic ology, that's not a word, never changes. Like, we'll still be using this in 100 years, and we will never go to the LED. And like, cartoons still use like anvils and millstones and stuff, you know, that like nobody's ever seen. It's great, I like that. I'm conservative that way. Don't do it, things, you can just throw them away. So, I am responsible for none of the cartoon language. We all just like appropriate it from everybody. But I'm very fond of the thought balloon, because I just like the idea of, if you could read everybody's thoughts, like floating above their head, how great that would be. It would like cut through a lot of, you know, social nonsense. You meet somebody and like, how are you? You read their thoughts, you're like, all right, I'm done with you. I like how the top row of the typewriter equals swearing. You know, I wish I had edited that. I really do. But eventually, you need symbols for people, and then you need a character. The character is not a portrait. You know, it's not. It's not complimentary.
Hello.
Hello. People don't hang their character up in the lobby of their, you know, the foyer of their country house and point to it proudly or anything. You know, it's basically rude. You take somebody's worst features and then make them even worse. So, oh, I don't know, this grad, I'll start with Reagan. So, Reagan had these happy little eyes and neck wrinkles and some varicose cheeks. But what really made Reagan Reagan was that pile of hair. And you couldn't, he had very broad shoulders. And I never understood the adulation for Ronald Reagan. The Prince even did it. They called him the Great Communicator. You know, he'd stand up there in this like quasi Alzheimer's phase at the end and kind of wobble his head and go, yes. And the press would go, oh, well, that is some great communicating. It's like a bobblehead doll, you know. And I blame him for a lot of what's going on today. You know, how John Kennedy said, you know, ask not what you can do for your country, but what. What your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. Well, Reagan, when he ran the second term, his whole thing was, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? When I'd gotten this job at the Herald Leader and was being paid to mock him, so by his logic, I should have voted for him. I was way better off. And then also, he said that thing about how government is not the answer, government is the problem. And like the Congress and the State House right now are just filled with these legions of young lawmakers who, that is their Bible. Like, government is terrible. So they chose to lean to it. Wasn't really developed by cartoonists, but by Dana Carvey on Saturday Night Live. And, you know, the necklace, and I'm going to do that. And sometimes it's funny that way. Like somebody can be, their caricature can be more like them than them, sort of in the public eye. And he was, I think, really the last of the sort of decent Republicans, you know. He should have really been reelected. He lost because he promised not to raise taxes and then got into office and saw that it was the responsible thing to do. I mean, here's the thing about taxes. Only politicians can raise taxes. Nobody else can do it. So if they all say, I'll never raise your taxes, where does that leave us? People are so dumb, they think if they didn't have to pay taxes, they look at their paycheck and they think, well, if I didn't pay those taxes, I'd have a lot more money. But they wouldn't have any more money because your employer knows what you'll work for. They know what your take-home pay is. They just lower your pay by that amount. You'd still get what you're getting now, only you wouldn't have roads and schools. And he still would have beaten Clinton except for Ross Perot running, right? Because he siphoned off, 12% of the Republicans or something. He still can't believe he lost to Bill Hayseed, Arkansas, never heard of you, fat boy, molester Clinton. He can't believe it. That's a nickname I just made up. It's kind of So there's actually two Clintons. There's the original jog through the drive-in at Arby's, fat, pre-heart attack Clinton, with the big waiting to exhale jowls. And he's got bags under his eyes. You ever notice that? Lots of them. They say, I read one of his biographies, that only sleeps 3 or 4 hours a night. They say he reads a lot. Howdy little, I feel your pain lip. He's much thinner now. Necktie given to him by one of his girlfriends. And I was drawing Clinton like this for a really long time, and one day I realized that, remember that famous picture where Monica Lewinsky is gazing up adoringly at him, and she's wearing a black beret? So if you put the black beret on Clinton, you give him this angry eyebrow and cover up the feel your pain lip with the mustache. That's the way I used to draw Saddam Hussein. Before we turn the damn curtain down. Clinton and then the next Bush, right? All right, so same sort of simian muzzle on W, but instead of that big tall head, he had almost no head, and these giant elf ears. And that, he had that, I called it the macho smirk, that little smile he got on his face when he wanted to talk tough. It's funny, when once you've got the elements, you can like stretch that like silly putty, and it still looks like him. Tom Colts, who I think is the smartest guy in the business, the Washington Post, his George Bush looked like this. Like that's the way he drew him. And it still looks like him to me. I almost feel like I'm leaving somebody out.
Obama?
Oh no, I'm getting it. He's got a mole. I never know which side it's on. Kentuckians were convinced the whole time that he was coming for their guns. But he never said anything about that, anything. He was what he always was, which is basically sort of a corporate centrist, like Hillary Clinton. He wasn't some radical who's going to come steal your guns. It was crazy. I never understood why, if people think the government is coming to take their guns, how come they buy more? Like, yeah, I want to be poor as well after they leave. Yeah, they're coming, they better buy more. Never made any sense to me. And then apparently they thought he'd be there like himself. They still think he's probably, tell him, he's not president anymore. Yeah, he's got more time in his hands. Okay. They thought he'd just show up on their porch. Maybe he'd have his, like, badass black guy posse with him. Shaq. The training day version of Denzel back there.
Give him the gun.
Hello. Moist towelette. Kind of gave an awful lot of a pencil name, didn't I? I'm still just gobsmacked that we could go from Barack Obama to this guy. People in other countries must just think, what's going on in the U.S.? And it's so, we're so polarized, the base of Republicans are convinced that Obama, ruined our reputation around the world. It's like the exact opposite. I don't even know how to communicate now with people. I heard the other day that 68% of the Republican base had never heard of Robert Mueller. So they don't even know there's this investigation into this Russia stuff. And if it ever comes down, it's going to hit them like out of the blue. You know? They're going to be pissed. And they have guns. Just warning you. I'll get to it. So, yeah, Howard Dean quit because, once that was on TV, it was like, well, you can't have a guy like that as president. The standard is now, is apparently say or do anything. I can't really like talking about it. It's a challenge not to draw him every day. But it's kind of difficult because you feel like you're playing into his hands because his whole fractious, distracting thing is to have everybody talking about the latest thing he did and sort of not noticing that a third of the cabinet, some cabinet positions are being filled and all this other horrible stuff. I think that's it. I'm done with the, oh no, wait. Okay, so I was hired in Lexington in 1984, which was the same year that a somewhat unknown Louisvillian upset a sitting senator, Democratic senator, and he ushered in essentially the era of the attack ad. So young Mitchell McConnell and his bloodhounds were widely, the ad was widely credited with starting his career. So I have drawn him his whole career. And it was only like 15 years ago that all my buddies in the business started drawing him too. So I had him myself for a long time. So I think that looks like him already. He's kind of amphibious. Apologize for the fact that my company issued me a substandard joystick jump drive. So I'm just going to show you the last few things that I've done on our website. This hasn't even been published yet. I drew it this morning. And it's young Bevan in school, and the class projects are up on the board, and little Billy says, I'm going to develop an app. And little
Susie says, well, I'm going to build a rocket. And little Deshaun, that's my, like, you know, paean to, I'm not a racist. Really, everybody, I think, is racist. I think we'd do better if we just quit pretending that, you know, because, I mean, I just am. I root for white teams in the NCAA tournament, like Utah and Wisconsin and stuff, because there's hardly any of them, and we're a total minority. So I think it's okay. And my solution to racism is interbreeding. Like, I think, like, there will never be an end to racism until everybody looks like Tiger Woods. You know how he's, like, black and white and Asian all together, right? And I have this idyllic vision of this great future when everybody looks like that, and two people approaching each other from opposite ends of the horizon, and they draw closer, and a faint look of recognition plays over their faces, and they're like, huh, you're just like me. And I smile, I get closer, and the guy, one looks at the other and says, you're my brother. I love you. The guy goes, what are you, a faggot? So anyway, I don't know how I got distracted on that. Oh yeah, Deshaun. It's blame Deshaun. So then little Matt says, I want to screw the teachers. That sort of lost momentum, didn't it, by my race joke. Sorry. Nobody ever laughs at that, but I still tell it because I think it's funny. I have this friend who's like a legit real comedian, and when I told him that, I said, Chris, I've got this joke I really like, but nobody ever laughs at it. And he goes, stop right there. In the business, if nobody ever laughs at it, that's not a joke. Oh, yeah, I get it. Okay, so can you go to the next one?
Yes.
Which would be yesterday's? All right, so this was yesterday's that was in today's paper. Should Trump be impeached if you toss a coin? And it's heads we lose, tails they win. And the Trump head says, in God we trust, and God is crossed out. And it says, me. And then divided states of America. And then Pence has, I wrote, E. Puritan Lunum. And then he's got a Koch brothers sign and a sign that says, pray away, gay. You know, all those Republican politicians who are really, really, really bothered by homosexuality, sooner or later. So this was after the Harvey Weinstein thing. And you see this character in a bathrobe going, come on, just a little massage. Hey, maybe even a threesome. It'll be good for your careers. And then it turns out it's Trump with McConnell and Ryan. And instead of being grossed out by it like the starlets, they're like, yeah, great, our pleasure. Where's it hurt? All right, next, please. by us. This is about low-income housing, affordable housing, and the woman and her, I guess it's a daughter. I guess only I would know that, though, right? Looking at all those locks and stuff and saying, well, gee, I thought those went on the inside. Next. Oh, I should have drawn Bev, and I will do that in a minute. So this is Bevan making this difficult decision whether to do the right thing and find the money to pay these people who did everything by the rules and put their money into the pension plan. And then his other tactic is this, you know, dumpster fire of, blame the teachers. And he's thinking to himself, gee, Solomon is never around when you need him. And I always put that, like, halo that's held on by a coat hanger. There's a story about that. Somebody remember to ask me about the coat hanger afterwards, okay? And his Bible is like laying there in the gasoline from the fire and stuff. And they're colored stones. There was this thing a couple months ago where I can't remember what it was in response to. It might have been like cops, you know, violence against minorities or something, where he said, well, we should spread colored rocks around. Or no, it was the drug scourge. We should spread colored stones around, and when people find them, then they'll be reminded, you know, that there's a drug problem. Like awareness. I'm so sick of awareness. You know, this is October. It's Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Has been for the last 40 Octobers. In case you're not aware yet. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm not aware. I've been aware of breasts for a long time. I've been aware of cancer for a long time, but this is the first I've heard of this month. I should have a breast cancer awareness month week at the end of September to warm you up for it. Hey. You know, the Walmart greeter gigs are all taken. In the meantime, I will draw Matt Bevan.
Who, because he called me a racist and continues to do it, I have a particular animus for him. He's got that wide-eyed look of those Christians who are sure that they're going to spend eternity in heaven and I'm going to be rotting in hell with you people. He kind of has some Homer Simpson to his caricature. And a lot of 5 o'clock shadow. I usually draw him with his Bible. And his selfie stick. He loves to take pictures of himself. Yeah, okay, so the third one, can you call that one out?
So that's the one that pissed him off so much. And it also got out, for some reason, I didn't really realize how this worked, but the network of right-wing hate radio, they just pick a villain, like, every day, and you're it for that day, and they, like, broadcast all over their websites and stuff, you know, go get this guy, and they list your phone number and your email addresses. And we were just bombarded, like not just me, but the publisher, the editors, everybody who works at the paper for 24 hours, all the time, like just filling up our mailboxes, filling up our emails with people just, you know, people who don't, not just don't read our paper, just who don't read. You know, who live in other states are going, I hate you, liberals. You know, you're like, whatever, dude. You know, people who live in California wanting to fight me. Like, 65-year-old, 150-pound, total wimp of a man, and you're going to punch me? I'm like, ready to get Social Security next year? So yeah, that's it. So they're not terrorists, they're your own adopted kids. So the one with the little blue field in it to the right there, please. thank you. So this cartoon has gotten more legs than the other 7,000 things that I've done combined. It's about the climate summit in Copenhagen in 2009, and there's this whole list of stuff that you need to do for the climate, energy independence, save the rainforest, sustainability, blah, blah, blah. And somebody stands up in the back and goes, well, what if it's a big hoax and we create this better world for nothing? And it was in USA Today. Did I miss a greet? I'm sorry. I'm going to be fired before I'm even hired. And it was in USA Today on the Monday before Copenhagen. Of course, nobody really subscribes to USA Today. You only see it if you're in an airport or a hotel. Well, everybody who was going to the Copenhagen summit was either in an airport or a hotel that day. So it became this, like, thing at the convention. And then it's just amazing. Like, 6 weeks ago, this is 8 years later, 45,000 people retweeted it in an hour and a half, just one Wednesday afternoon. You know, it just goes blah, every once in a while. And like every environmental group in the world has contacted me wanting to use it for one thing or another. They put it on billboards in Australia during this campaign against, I forget what, some nut in Canada paid an artist to paint it on the side of a barn. Some French company used it as their Christmas card. You know, just on and on and on and on. Requests for signed, you know, textbook, like everything. And it still goes on. And it's like I never drew anything else. There are two fake ones going around the internet. One of them is this, like, really weird science thing, you know, that's, like, too esoteric. I can't even figure out what it means, but it was done in good faith. And the other is some, like, anti-Semitic thing, you know, what if we killed all the Jews? Or just like, what? So, anyway, that's what that is. Try the one at the top left. Yeah, this is the one that got me the only death threats that ever seemed like a reason for us to call the company lawyers. It was called Coach Cal's Trophy Shelf. And then there's two spaces empty where it says, this space vacated. Vacated is the term they use for when you get caught cheating and they like take away your success, you know, your national title or something. It happened to them twice at Massachusetts and
Memphis.
Thank you. And so then the next one says NCAA champs, and then the other one says you lose at IU and you take your ball and go home, one and done. And that's because they dropped my alma mater, Indiana, from the schedule. They played up there and lost, and then Cal just went, well, we're not playing anymore. And I don't even think a coach should be allowed to change a, like, 50-year, you know, rivalry like that. Like, who is he, you know? So anyway, the reason they say he did it was that Indiana insisted on playing in Bloomington, and Kentucky wanted to play in the Dome in Indy, because Cal only has his players for 1 year, so he wants them to get used. The Domes are where they play the Final Four. So if you've never played in one, it's, like, different, you know, it's enormous and kind of windy, and there's all kinds of weirdness to it, and he wants them to get used to it. So he really wanted this game in a dome. But, you know, call me old-fashioned, but I'm thinking college basketball, college campus. So, how about the one right next to it, to the right? Yeah, okay, so this is our local congressman, Andy Barr, and then Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul, and sometimes I draw Bevin as an Ayatollah, because he's a religious nut. Career first, party second, Kentucky third, Trump. They all supported Trump.
Christmas that basically said one out of four Americans suffers from depression around the holiday. Okay, I'm one of those four, right? And pretty much every musician, comic and cartoonist that I know is somewhere on that spectrum of up and down. We just are. So I thought, well, that's a good subject. So I drew this interior of like Santa's workshop. And so here's the workshop and little elves, you know, and here's the happy little elf making a, you know, choo-choo train or something. You have to use your imagination. And then there's the, we'll just call it elf number two, making a teddy bear. And then elf number three, making whatever else. And then over here, where elf the first one should have been, there was just a bunch of little pieces of rope and a big pair of scissors. And then up here, there was this little elf feet. I know. I know. This is like Christmas Eve, too. But, I mean, the thing is, you can't have subjects that you can't draw about. Like, I know that suicide is awful. It's like not news to me. I get that. That's a reason to do it, not a reason not to do it. So I went home, and the next day I got up and went to the paper, and my cartoon wasn't in the paper. That's weird. You know, back then it was like this process, you know, give it to somebody, the actual drawing, and then go make this like engraving of it, you know, and then, you know, photo negative and blah, blah, blah. I thought, well, you know, maybe somebody spilled coffee on it or something. And I got to work, and Pam Lucka, the editor, said, I thought she was going to apologize for the fact that something went wrong. And she said, well, I guess you noticed I pulled her foot out. And her eyes welled up, and she said, I had a family member. I just can't imagine the family members of people who had this happen seeing that in the paper. What, you think they've forgotten that, you know, cousin Bailey killed himself? What do you mean? But I didn't argue very much, you know. So that was the only time, not counting the time that we won't speak about. Yes, sir, what else? What else you got? Sorry, I can blather on.
Oh, we've got time for questions, eh?
But not answers. I need the video off before I can do that.
Oh.
We'll do that last.
We'll do that last, yeah. Back here? Yes. Question?
No? No? Get the hell out of here. What's your name? What's your name?
Tom.
Tom.
What did you know? Does the editorial staff tell you what the content's going to be on that page?
Absolutely not, ever. No. They don't even look at it. I mean, that thing I drew today of Devin saying, I want to screw the teacher, I just did that and got my car and left town. Nobody's approval. I mean, I'm the senior member of that edit board, and I won the paper of awards. I'm not composed or anything. But, no, they don't. I mean, theoretically, there are two people who have the authority to pull them, but they don't use it, and they shouldn't use it. You know, I mean, their job should be, if you're going to hire people to express their opinions, you know, a novice editor or publisher thinks if they only do it once in a while, it's okay. But once in a while is all you have to do it before you get the writers and artists to start censoring themselves. You know, then you get in that situation, oh, they'll never go for this, you know. It's just unworkable. The only thing that really works, and this is a hard sell, is to let us do whatever we want, and then when people complain, you defend it. That is what I think the publisher and the editor's job should be. But like I say, it takes a while to train them. Quite a while. Yes, sir.
Are you acquainted with Hugh Haney's work?
Sure. Hugh Haney is one of the reasons that I got into this. Growing up in Bloomington, this was a legendary cartoonist at the Courier Journal in Louisville. And we got both the conservative Quail Family Indianapolis Star and the liberal Louisville Courier Journal and the Bloomington papers in my household. Yeah, he's one of the guys who made me fall in love with it. You know, he's drawn all these really rude pictures of Nixon with his big penis nose and stuff. And that looks like fun. Yeah, I loved him. He turned into a sad character. He went over a period of 30 years from my idol to being my worst nightmare. He basically drank himself to death at the end of his life. He was very unhappy and felt slighted that he never won the Pulitzer, which was kind of unfortunate. It was a lot more competitive back then. There were 300 or 400 cartoons. Not now. Anybody can have one. Anyway, yes, I did like it. Yes. Tell me your name. There's no subject matter. I mean, everybody has, people think, you know, because of my reputation, that I don't have any filter. But actually, this is the filtered version. You know, I think it's on us to be our own judges of that. There are no subjects, but obviously there are lines that you wouldn't cross, like things that no decent person, except the President of the U.S., would actually say or do. But no, I can't think of any, you know, I mean, anything that's in the culture or in the news or that exists anywhere, the kind of the worst things there are, the more they need to be talked about, you know, child slavery and all that horrible stuff. It's really easy to get caught up in the, like, thing of the day, you know, that everybody else is doing, you know, and you're like, oh, you know, Trump told this family that, you know, the guy knew him. This, like, phony story from yesterday about Trump telling that family, well, I guess he knew what he was getting in for. You know, that's like a non-story to me. You can't tell without hearing what he said, what he meant, or how he said it. Or a better example is he made up that crap about how, well, nobody else ever called him. Obama never called him. So he just made it up on the spot the way he does. So a lot of, it's very tempting to, like, take that every day because there's something every day like that. But if you do that every day, you get to the end of the year and you realize you never did draw about population or the environment or children being sold into sex slavery or any of that, like, really horrible big stuff. So I try to make room for the dreadful stuff. Well, I mean, sure, there are things I could draw that, I probably have a bigger body of work about race in this country than any of my peers. You know, I'm always drawing that. It's a very interesting subject to me. I would expect somebody to tell me I couldn't draw something like race is, although there are plenty of cartoonists, and mostly on the web, who stuff that's just like blatantly, awfully racist. That's what you're doing with this gift. You're like better than me, too. You know, like better artists.
Back here.
Yes, sir, what's your name?
Yes, sir, my name is Dave. You talked about dwindling numbers of editorial cartoonists. Where do you see the field heading, and how would a person try to break into that?
I think it's hopeless. Nobody is ever going to get the corporate sponsorship. Like, I had probably 7 years of real mediocrity, but being paid the whole time to get good at it. You know, that theory of 10,000 hours or whatever it is, you know. And nobody gets that anymore. I mean, the reality is right now, the best young kids are just doing it on their own websites and hoping people notice. And they're great. It's a shame that nobody's there to go, you know, we'll pay you and give you benefits while you get great at this. But certainly newspapers aren't doing it. There are a couple dozen of us, as I said. Some websites that hire, but I'm not hopeful about the future. Our young budding cartoonist Jennifer here is like looking at me like, thanks. What's your name?
So I know you said that you are constantly scouring the news and keeping up with what's going on.
process like when you, how do you decide what it is you're going to draw in a day?
I do it the same way you do it. I read all this stuff, I stop every once in a while and write it down, make a little list. So I always have this list, and then I stare at it for a while. And then I think, well, what's like the most important thing on the list? And then I start playing around with it. That's the best way I can describe it. Like that coin thing. How did I get to the coin? Oh, I know, because it was this, was it Hobbes' choice, Hobson's choice, where you lose both ways? Heads, I lose, tails, you win, whatever. So I was, that's what I was thinking between Pence and Trump, and so then I thought about that coin flipping thing. Plus I was in a hurry, and that was like an easy, fast, 25-minute drawing. Isn't that how you do it, Seth?
Well, you've got more talent than I've got drawing with a pen and paper.
Over here?
I practiced a lot.
Larry.
Larry, it was nice enough to bring me this lovely print. Thank you.
I feel guilty about my personal contributions to global warming.
You do? Why?
Because I contributed.
So? Well, I don't feel bad about mine because I have no kids, so I figure when I'm dead, that's the end of my carbon footprint. I can have a private damn jet while I'm alive, and I still wouldn't feel bad about it.
One more question.
That wasn't really a question, though. Yeah. That was a little kind of a statement. All right, well, yeah. Yes, ma'am.
What moves you? What moves you?
Anger.
Anger?
Yeah. Completely pissed all the time. Like ever since I realized that everything I was taught as a kid was a lie, like, oh shit, wait, there's no Santa, there's no Easter Bunny, mom and dad aren't that happy, this isn't true, that isn't true, it's all, it's not even just that it's a lie, it's so much worse. It's horrible. Like, what we have these brains that are astonishing that can make this thing out of like sand and ground up metal that you dig out of the ground, and it can play videos for us, and we're using these brains to like vote for Donald Trump and to like, all this crazy, I mean, humanity is insane.